load 16 tons. What do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store.
Welcome to the Wealth Money Radio Show, brought to you by WealthMoney.org. Byron Dale and Greg Soderbergh are your hosts. This is the only program that addresses the destructive consequences of using a debt money system. Financial slavery is the result when all money is created and put into circulation through loans. How interest grows the debt, but not the money supply, and the effects that interest and debt has on our lives. If you would like to join the program and have a question or a comment, please call 347-884-9499. That's 347-884-9499. And now your hosts, Byron Dale and Greg Soderbergh.
What do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store.
It's another Saturday morning. We're Greg Soderbergh and Byron Dale. Welcome to Wealth Money Radio, August 31st, 2019, or Labor Day weekend, Wealth Money Radio. You can help by calling and joining in the discussion. Again, the number is 347-884-9499. If you're one of those who has only listened to archived shows online, Wealth Money Radio is the opportunity for you to actually join in, call, have a conversation, and it's actually kind of fun. So why don't you call in and talk to us. Number again, 347-884-9499. So I guess, Byron, I want to talk a little bit today about Labor Day and, you know, try to see how that ties in with money, and was wondering if you felt like talking about that too.
Well, that sounds good to me. I just didn't have any research on it lately. I've been pretty busy doing other things, and I tell you the truth, I didn't even realize it was Labor Day weekend. But
yeah,
of course, when I was working at Target, that didn't make any difference. You had to go to work anyway. So Labor Day obviously don't apply to all businesses. But I think it has a lot to do with anything, and we was talking about it before the show, and I thought you had some good points about, and I'll let you get into it because you're the one that read up on it. You studied it this last weekend, and I appreciate that very much. And I'll let you go ahead because I thought it was pretty interesting how the people used to work. You said
70. Yeah. The thing is,
70 hours a week.
Yeah, you know, my research, I'm kind of like you, you know, I got time poverty. I don't have time to really dig in, but my research amounted to probably about 10 minutes of just reading about Labor Day. And basically, Labor Day was an effort by working people to unify, but also to push to work fewer hours a week. And it's pretty much like in the 1830s, the workers were working about 70 hours a week, and they worked at getting that cut back. And finally, 60 years later, in the 1890s, they'd reduced it to 60 hours a week. So it took them that long to go from 70 down to 60 hours a week. I don't understand, you know, I mean, I who wants to work 70 hours a week? I know I've worked a number of years, sometimes 50, 55, and it hardly leaves time for anything else. But I was wondering, too, you know, back then, 1830s, you know, what was the cost of living? What was the purchasing power of money? Because that has a lot to do with things, you know, if you... Let's just say, for example, if you have to work an hour to buy a car, it's a lot different than having to work 5 or 10 hours to buy a car. And so I don't know maybe back then with the cost of living and the purchasing power, you know, probably was still pretty good because they had some wealth money in circulation. They still had free coinage going on, and with a debt-free medium of exchange, the unpayable cost of interest isn't increasing the spread between the money supply and the cost of living. And so maybe they felt like, you know, they were earning enough, but they just wanted to have more non-work hours, you know, where they could actually enjoy their life instead of working all the time. And I know they didn't have it as fancy back then, probably, quite likely, as we do today. But, you know, I'm sure they still felt like there was more to life than just working all the time. But as time went on, you know, they suspended free coinage.
Well, and there's another thing here that you need to talk about, too, because not everybody was working in, you know, they may have been working in the factories and stuff, but in those days, most of the people had their own business. And they may have worked, I know, on the ranch we worked from sun up to sundown, so you're talking about 12 hours a day most of the time. Mm-hmm. But it isn't like that you had to be there slamming away. If something happened, you could go do something different, or if, you know, something came up, you could take the time off to go take care of that issue. And all those things, it's so much different than it is working in stores and factories where you have to be there and have to be working every minute while you're there or else, you know. And that makes a lot of difference with the whole population, because the bulk of the people weren't working in factories and working in stores. And, of course, that's why they wanted to get rid of most of the family farm businesses and family-owned stores, because, sure, you might have been at the store, but it wasn't like you had to be just working all the time either, because, you know, if somebody come in, you could stop and talk to them a little bit and all those kind of things, which I know from personal experience, I know for a fact it was that way, because when I was a kid, almost everybody, you know, all the relatives, they also had a farm or maybe a trucker. We had one trucker, and the bulk of the rest of them had their own little farms. It wasn't big farms, but they had them, and they did well on them. And that's a whole different story when you're working that, because you're doing for yourself and you're thinking about it, and if something else comes up, or you can take some time off and go enjoy something, where that ain't the way in stores. Because if you take too much time off, pretty quick you realize you don't have a job. And it's a whole different mindset for everything than it was back then. So, yes, and I don't know if they work 7 days a week or 6 days a week or 5 days a week in order to get the 70 hours. I have no idea which. But I know if they work 7 days a week, they would be 10 hours a day for 7 days.
Yeah.
Well, you know, that don't give you a whole lot of time. If they drop it down to six, I didn't get that far. But, you know, now you're working more hours a day, but you still get one day off. So I have no idea how that was worked back then. When I was a kid, I never knew anybody that either didn't own their own business or none of them, very few of them worked for somebody else. And, you know, they may have worked for a farmer or something like that, or worked for somebody in a where they're selling materials, woods, and stuff like that. But it wasn't like you had to work like you do now in stores. I know that for a fact, because there wasn't that kind of intensity. So all that goes into effect, too. But I don't care who you were. If you was constantly working 7 days a week, and, of course, in those days, they probably wouldn't, because in those days, going to church meant a lot more than it does nowadays. And so they probably only worked 6 days a week. But, again, you know, then you're working a lot of hours, and you know, I could see where you could get tired of that pretty quick, especially if you was working in a factory or something like that. And I don't know. I mean, I have no personal knowledge of how they treated him in them factories. I'm sure that they pushed him hard to work. I've just heard stories about, you know, sometimes that, like women, they have their time every month, and sometimes they didn't even want to give them a little time to, you know, go take care of that problem or get over the pain for a little bit or one of those things. And you have no idea how bad they treated him in those places, and that all would have to do with why they would want to work less hours too.
Yeah, and that's, you know, it gets back to unifying. They wanted to be unified as workers, and, you know, that's where the union effort came from. And they were not only concerned about working fewer hours, but, you know, what we mostly hear about is working conditions. And that's kind of what you're talking about, is a lot of the working conditions were really bad. But what I want to kind of get people to understand more and more, so they really understand, is that the effect of creating all money as interest-bearing debt, how that affects your cost of living over time. And when all money is created as a loan, they only create the principal, and the interest portion grows with time, but it doesn't increase the money supply. And that interest portion has to be added to the cost of living, or the borrower has to add that to what he charges for what he sells. Otherwise, how does he think he's going to be able to pay back both principal and interest? And
well, it's impossible to do it unless you get somebody else's money. And then another thing, too, you got to think about that most people, you know, they didn't think about like we do. I mean, you know, I have no idea what the working conditions were like, but working them hours. And then when you get back, you have that story about the chair that you personally investigated, and from your own. And I want you to get into that in a little bit. But see, I don't imagine at that time they thought a lot about it until. But there's no question that the more people you can get together and put the pressure on the boss, the better chance you are of actually getting something done. Right. I know personally, I thought we should have a raise at where I worked, and so I asked some people, and yes, they'd like to have it too. And I said, well, why don't we go together and do it? Well, so then they all agreed, and I said, I'll write up something we can agree to, and then we'll all do it. And I went around to ask a few of them, and it wasn't some long that somebody turned me in for, you know, for doing that in the store. I wasn't supposed to do that. And then I was called into the office because they said, that's soliciting, and you can't do that. And I said, well, I didn't think I was soliciting anything. I was just asking them if they would like to have a wage increase. And you'd be surprised how many of them was so afraid to even say something for fear they'd get fired if they asked for a raise. You know, I mean, just think of what kind of a attitude that is to live in and work in, or you're even afraid to ask for a raise for fear you'd get fired. And you were surprised. I was just shocked at how many people said that to me. Go ahead.
Yep. It's economic servitude is what it is. We've talked about it numerous times on the show. When you are afraid to say or do the right thing, in this case, ask for what you think, you know, you deserve, then you're in servitude, because they've got you. You know, if you do that, you lose your job, you lose some cash flow, maybe as a ripple effect, you lose your apartment, lose your home, whatever. And so we just don't speak out because we're afraid that they'll take something from us. And fortunately, if the history books are true at all, there were some people once upon a time that came to America to get away from that sort of thing and to create a great country where people were free. And they may have started that, but it hasn't worked out that way because we're all
in England, especially, and most of the people that came here originally came from England first. And my ancestors, you know, on my mother's side were Quakers, and they come over here just so they could have freedom of religion, because in England, the king decided what the religion was, and that's what you all had to go by. And if you didn't, you got yourself in trouble, sometimes in jail and sometimes in other ways. And this I know from, you know, some factual, you know, experience and talking to my ancestors and my mother and how her family come over. And of course, my family had come into this country really early. It was in the late 1600s and early 1700s, and both sides of the family come to this country. And so, you know, I'm sure it was so much different back then than it is nowadays, where, you know, it's just, you can't even comprehend it. But you do see constantly this growing cost of living, and you've got to see it, because, you know, you go on the debt clock, which is really interesting to look at, and people should look at it more, and can see how that debt is just constantly growing all the time. Well, and then, of course, you just said it, you know, if you borrow $100, you get $100. But if you have to pay it back $110, it you can't, unless somehow, someplace, somebody increases the money or loses out, you know. And even in a poker game, and I did this in court one time, and we loaned people so much money to play poker, and that everybody agreed that, yeah, that could be working and that could happen. And so I said, I'll be the banker and I'll loan them the money. Well, then after a while, the poker game was over, and we assumed they all just happened to break even. So I said, okay, now you each borrowed $100 from me, but you each got to pay me back $110. Well, that means it was only $1,000 in the whole poker game, and when they got through, they had to pay $1,100 to get out, you know, to pay the debt off to get out. Well, that's an impossibility, because that was all the money there was there, so you can't have it. And the court that was in, the lawyer turned just white as a sheet, and the judge, when it hit him, and of course, those kind of contracts aren't enforceable by law, because if it's impossible to do it, then it's not a rule or a law that's enforceable, because it's impossible to do. And that's what they've got us all in. And then the judge, of course, he just got redder than a ripe tomato. I mean, it was really something to see. But it didn't change any of their opinions. They went right on with doing what they was doing. They don't. My personal experience is none of them pay any attention to the laws or the Constitution or anything. They just do what they feel they want to do. And that's the biggest reason our whole court system has gone to hell. And that's exactly what it's gone, because they no longer say, you know, the whole concept, every one of them guys that go into office swore an oath to uphold the Constitution, and then none of them even read it and don't pay any attention to it. So you get all these rules and laws, and I call the Supreme Court judge or clerk here a while back, and she wouldn't talk to me much except, well, what you got to do, you got to follow all the rules, and well, wait a minute. How do you know what all the rules are? Because I know for a fact you guys change the rules as the situation comes along. And then what about the Constitution? Well, then they wouldn't address that. And I was, of course, asking about the right redress of grievance, and that subject wouldn't even be allowed to come up. Well, when you have that, when the whole concept of our government was having a basic law that affected everybody the same. But when you get the lawyers coming out of law school and taught, no, that's not true, you guys can make your own laws. And the judge, I had a government guy tell me, well, what you don't understand is every word that comes out of the mouth of a judge is law. And see, that's when things really have to go to heck, when they get to begin to believe those kind of nonsense things, that every word the judge says is law. That's not what the Constitution says. That's not the way it's supposed to work, because the supreme law was set down in the Constitution, and then that was to guide everybody. But they decided, well, no, we don't have to do that. We can become the law ourselves, and that's totally unconstitutional. So from the very beginning, it began to go bad, because the judges decided they can do these things and they can make laws, and that's not what any power given to them at all. All they could do is make opinions, and here's my opinion, and you need to think it over, and then decide whether you need to change the law or do what to make it work. But they couldn't make the law themselves according to the Constitution, which I have really learned that hardly anybody's ever read or paid any attention. And in my opinion, Trump is one of them, because if he was, he would see things a lot different. And I think Trump's trying to do the right things for the American people. But if you don't understand the rules that you're supposed to follow after you swore to them, how can you come out with the right decisions to do everything? Because if you're not going to go back to the Constitution, which is supposed to be the supreme law of the land, go ahead. Why don't you tell about your chair experience? Because I think that's really interesting and really shows how things work.
Okay. Well, what it gets back to is the thing we call the spread, and the spread is the growing space between the money supply and what the costs of living are, and it's caused by adding the interest charge or the cost of money to the production, and that production can be either a service or it can be a good, a hard product. but in any case, if you go in and you're going to start a furniture store, let's say, you need a certain amount of dollars to get the store and buy inventory to put in the store and all the things that go along with having a business to get started, and they make you the loan, and then they're going to charge you interest on it. And from the time you sign the papers until that loan needs to be paid off, the interest portion of your loan is a debt that constantly grows, but it's not money. And you have to add the cost of your loan, the cost of that borrowing, into the prices of your furniture. And so right there is really what causes price inflation. It isn't the fact that they increase the money supply. The fact is that they increase the money supply as an interest-bearing debt, and that's the big difference. So that's what when now somebody else is going to have to go out and borrow money to pay for your chairs, right, if they want to buy them. And so this is an ongoing process that, you know, in order to pay your interest, you got to capture somebody else's loan principal. And when the other part of it is when loan principal is repaid, money is extinguished. There is no permanent money supply. It only exists while it's owed. And while it's owed, the debt constantly grows. So trying to get you to understand how this debt and the growth of the debt affects your life. And most people feel an effect on their life in their pocketbook. And so once upon a time, I ran across one of my customers and I saw a sign in his store, and it was for a chair, a wooden kitchen chair in 1870. And this store at the time had been in business 126 years. It was a family-owned, handed-down business, which don't have much of that anymore because most of the kids, when they see what their parents got to go through to own and run a business, they don't want to have any part of it. But anyway, and it said that this kitchen chair in 1870 cost 30 cents, okay? And I said, wow, you know, look at what a wooden kitchen chair costs today. And the owner of the store said, yeah, but he said, we make more money now than they made back then. And so I kind of looked into that and wondered if that was all true. And so I looked at what the wage was for 1870, and the average hourly wage in 1870 was $1.50 per hour. That's like 10 times less than the 15 per hour minimum wage they want or get now. But so think about that. You could work an hour and 36 minutes, and you could buy yourself a new wooden kitchen chair. So then I went, and this was a few years ago, so the latest number I had at that time was 1993, and the wooden chair in 1993 now costs $100. So it went from 30 cents to $100. And you can tell me all day long about how the quality of the chair and how much different that chair is, but in reality, there wasn't any difference in the chair. It was the same chair, a wooden kitchen chair, okay? And so in 1993, to buy that wooden kitchen chair, you had to work 12.2 hours. So as we keep adding the unpayable costs of debt to everything, you have to work longer to buy the same thing. And eventually, you run out of hours in the day. And so I was thinking about the chair, and I was thinking about Labor Day, and thinking about in the 1830s when laborers wanted to unify and work fewer hours, you know, all that tied together. Well, the other part of it is that at that time in the 1830s, America still had a process going on called free coinage. And of course, they had another process going on, too, called debt money. And then there was a struggle between the two. And, of course, we all know that debt money won out. But, you know, if I create a loan to you for $100 at 10%, you're going to owe me $110, $10 more than I created. But if there's free coinage out there where the people could labor and take their production to the mint and have it stamped into coins free of charge and have a debt-free medium exchange, now there was debt-free money out there to pay the interest on my loan, and the debt would not grow so fast, okay? So your cost of living would not increase so fast. But in 1853, lobbyists for a certain special interest group managed to get all free coinage of silver suspended except for the $1 denomination. So now there's less wealth money being created, and the debt's going to grow a little bit faster. In 1873, they suspended all free coinage in 1873, they suspended all free coinage of silver, but they still had gold free coinage. So now the money supply, wealth money, diminished a little bit more, and the debt started growing faster. And then in 1933, President Roosevelt took all the free coinage away, all the gold and or gold certificates out there in exchange for debt money under threat of fine or imprisonment. And I charted these things. I charted the growth in taxation, the growth in the debt, the increase in warring between nations, and it all ties together. You can see as they stop free coinage and there's less and less to pay the interest with, except more and more borrowing, you know, just a debt you cannot pay. And as that debt increases more and more, you can see taxation increasing, you can see the debt increasing, you can see the wars increasing between the nations. And so if we spent the money into circulation as an earned payment, in other words, it could not get spent, could not get created or spent unless it was to pay for something that was done, kind of like your paycheck. You kind of don't get paid unless you go to work, right? Okay. And pay for building roads and bridges with debt-free money instead of taxation or borrowing. Now the money would go into circulation with no debt. And as you slowed the creation of money as loans, now you'd start restoring the parity, if you want to call it, or the equality between the cost of living and the money supply. Then your life and, quite frankly, the world would start turning around and people would live better, happier, more prosperous lives, probably live in a more fair society. You wouldn't have as much corruption as what you have now, but you're always going to have some of that, I believe. But anyway, so I just want you to understand that.
Rule is on, Greg, so let's bring him on and see what he has to say this morning about what you said and other things. Good morning, Rule. How are you this morning?
Oh, pretty good. I listened to the first half hour here, and you said quite a bit. I don't even know where to begin, actually. I don't know what you
want. Well, I understand that. Have you had any great experiences lately?
Well, yeah, I have. Living in a college town, I spent a lot of time. Of course, I was a campus minister for 10 years. And then I church pastor for another year, and I had several conversations, well, a lot of conversations with college kids and a pastor, and quite a few business owners this week, and one of my greatest conversations was with a just recently retired gentleman from New York, who I was able to explain to out in front of a parking lot of a grocery store. The New York gentleman said that it was the first time someone spoke about the money issue that actually made sense to him, and we exchanged names, information, what have you. But, my concern is you know, if a person's going to make a difference, as I'm listening and out and about in my community, I feel or sense that the people that are going to make a change is this younger generation, because the average older person I talk to anymore, they don't care. I mean, they walk away from me and say, well, good luck. There's nothing you can do. Just live your life and just enjoy what you can. But the younger people, and I feel this is why all the social Democrats right now are appealing to the younger people, because they're desperate. And, you know, I had a conversation, and there's a lot of things, so I got to keep it kind of minimal here. But I went to the college campus on a Thursday evening, like I do most routinely, and I picked up something caught my eye, and I'm seeing this now more and more. It's actually all over our campuses. There's this pamphlet, and it's called the Strategic Plan for the Year 2030. Now, I don't know if you are significant, if you're aware of the significance of this year 2030, but I put some puzzles together on why the election 2020 is so important for this economics. But in this 2030 pamphlet, it explains a strategic outline that has to be implemented all over the United States, and it's a United States blueprint for all the campuses, and it outlines all the things they have to have in place. But one thing that really stood out is the amount of money they have to try to capture by then. And it's, you know, ours alone here is 30 to 40 million they want to be able to capture to implement all these programs. And so as I grabbed this pamphlet and walked down the stairs to the front office, there happened to be a young college student there, and I politely asked, what are you majoring in? And she told me, just elementary education, you know, not a high-paying job or whatnot. Mm-hmm. And I said, do you mind if I ask you a question? And she said, no, go right ahead. And I said, do you think your life would be different if you learned about money before you learned about your education? And she said, explain that to me. And I said, well, I said, is it? I said, I just find it interesting. I said, I hope you do too, that in life we're taught to go out and work and think about money later. And I said, I'm sure you're in debt. And I said, wouldn't it be nice if you didn't have that? And she said, oh, yeah. And I caught her attention for probably 10 or 15 minutes if she kept asking more questions. But the attentiveness of these college students, whenever I mention it, it catches them off guard, and their eyes light up, and they're like, man, that really makes sense. Yeah, this is BS. We're told to go out and work and think about money later. And I said, well, if money was taught first, do you think perhaps you would choose different choices in life? I'm like, oh, absolutely. And I said, you're being ripped off. I said, it's time people start thinking about money, and then they can plan their life. I'm like, man, that is a good idea. So that's just one. The younger generation is desperate, but also in this picture, and I'll finish here. When I saw that agenda for 2030 and happened to capture 30 to 40 million, I see this shift where the states and the governments are getting all the money so they can suppress the rest of the people. And the states are desperate to capture this, and we ought to be, you know, we're up against a challenge here. Who's going to capture what the quickest and control who?
Absolutely. And think about in that 2030 plan that they have to they're going to get some money and they're going to teach and learn or do all these wonderful things. But if one of those things is not changing his money so it comes into circulation debt-free, they're just pretty much wasting their time and doing the same old stuff everybody's always done, because the things that they're doing does not address the root of the problem that's making so many people unhappy.
Right.
Well, and these kids have got to be I talked to my granddaughter quite a little bit, and she's just getting, you know, up in that age where, you know, she has to live on her own and all these kind of things, and the jobs are hard to come by. And it isn't so much that there isn't a job, but if you don't know the right people, it's hard to even get in, you know, is in the door. And she was talking about what the rent used to be and what it is now. And years ago, she talked about one house she knew about that, and 20 years ago, it cost $900 to rent that house. And today it costs $2,000 and more to rent a house like that. And can you say, can you imagine how much more income these people have just to be able to rent a house to live in?
Well, Byron,
we're not talking about buying a house. This is just to rent, which basically you never ever get any equity in it. You just pay more for the rent, and yet they got to have a house to live in, and they don't have the wherewithal to borrow enough money to own a house. And it's just amazing how you see, as she talked, how the spread is growing. The exact same house, it's now 20 years older, but it costs over twice as much just to rent the same house. And these are the things, and of course, this is why Bernie Sanders and these guys and all these leftists are always pushing, well, we're going to give you a government, we'll give you everything for free. But they never want to talk about war. Where's all this money going to come from to give everybody free education and all that? And exactly what is going to be the education? I'm not familiar with this 23 thing, but exactly what is their goal in 23 to accomplish?
Yeah, and the other thing about free stuff is if it's free, you don't need money. So, you know, they never ask that question either. You know, well, if it's free, then we don't need any money. But they don't talk about it that way. They talk about it. Really, it's not free. It's prepaid because, you know, let's say it's a college education. The professors aren't going to work for free. The janitors that clean the hallways and all the building, they're not going to work for free, are they? And the apartment that you're talking about, and you touched on it, is, you know, it used to cost $900 a month, now it's $2,000 a month. And some people out there would reply to that, well, that's because it's, you know, either the things are made so much better now, or, they improve.
No, it's the
improve.
Same house. It's just 20 years
right,
older.
Yeah. Exactly.
Come on, let's stay with the facts.
Yep. And I'm just using an example of what people would say. And the fact of the matter is, like the apartment the house that Byron's talking about, the only way it's changed is it's probably gotten older and more worn out. And, you know, so why did the cost go up? And that's what Byron was talking about, because of the interest, the unpayable cost of money. We do not pay interest. We think we do, but we simply transfer the debt to someone else, and the debt keeps growing. And proof of that is in a common sense statement that you cannot pay debt with debt and get rid of the debt. And that's what we're all trying to do, and it's not possible. And when you understand that, you realize at least the foolishness of our situation to continue to try to do something that cannot be done.
Well, if
you know,
and I don't know, because I've never really thought about this thing about, you know, everything getting free, except you know what, it can't work. But let's say, okay, now the government is going to pay for all that. Where's the money going to come from? Or if the richest people, they're going to tax them, and then they're going to pay for it. Well, and how is these rich people going to stay rich very long if they have to pay for all those things that everybody's getting free? And I think we need to think about those kind of concepts and ask them, well, just where's all this money going to come from? In fact, where does money come from? And I guarantee you, I've seen figures on a computer lately where at least 99% of the people have never given a thought to where money comes from, how it gets into circulation or anything about it.
Byron, the big question in all that, if it's free, why does anybody have to pay for it? It's free. And if it's free,
well, you just explained that. You just explained that, because it can't be free, because the college professors aren't going to work for free.
Right.
The janitors aren't going to work for free. Right. Now they got to have police running up and down them college campus all the time to keep the things that you don't want to have happen. Stop from happening. So hey, this can't be for free. It's got to be. Somebody's got to pay these bills.
Right, but even in
the, now, it may not be
that.
The
high,
it may not be the college student, but somebody's going to.
Right.
Now,
right.
Where
and
are they saying who's going? Where's going that money going to come from?
Right, but I understand the reality of that free thing. But you know, just when they're talking about it, you know, if it's free, money shouldn't be an element in it. It's free. You don't need any money. And if it's free, nobody has to pay for it. So,
well,
you know,
but you know that can't be
right.
True. I mean, just
right. I know it
can't
be
true,
but,
because
you know
that all those people, the college professors are going to have a house to live in. They're going to have clothes to wear and all these kind of things. They're going to have cars to drive and all these things don't come free.
Mm-hmm.
So
right.
Where is all this free education going to come from?
Mm-hmm.
What do they
yeah.
say where the free education is going to come from?
Yeah. You can imagine with the kind of education we're getting now that we're paying for, you can imagine how lousy it'll be when it's free.
Well, Rule, in that 23 you were talking about, where do they explain where the money's going to come from for the college degrees to be free?
They don't explain it. They just say that they have to raise it. It's going to, you know, the raise to 30-40 million. And the interesting thing is, you know, the reason this 2020 election, there's so many people with socialist ideologies coming forward is because that's the starting point. People don't realize 2020 is a starting point, and all states, and you can look this up and verify it. I've been to actual state meetings. It is a UN mandate that has to be implemented by 2030, or all states, all facilities face fines. And I spoke with a lady yesterday up in Wyoming. She's the head of the Republican council stuff up in that area. And we had this conversation. It's up. It's in every state. It's in every school. It's in every form of your life. And I think what it is they're realizing this is a world debt problem, so they're trying to solve it, I think, on a different level, and that's why if you look in your – I just saw it in a South Dakota paper yesterday, and even in our own state, in a state paper, where we have to – they're saying we have to develop by law. We have to have affordable housing for everybody, and now in this college document, it says affordable college. You know, the word affordable is becoming it's part of every document I'm finding that it's, you know, it deals with monetary policy, and it's even in your health care. It's everything affordable housing, affordable living, affordable health care. And so South Dakota's making this big push. They're up in Rapid City, South Dakota. They're building all of these housing units called affordable housing. Well, and that's coming from the taxpayer. So it's going to make everybody more poor, and that's why they have to capture all the – isn't this something? You can't make this stuff up. But it's a very serious document, and we're being subjected to UN control. That's all it is.
Sure.
We'll have one big national world socialist party, right, that just runs everything, and they never discuss where the money's going to come from.
Right, and if you go to the World Bank website, it's all even on there. You know, we have to help the world now. It's all, you know, become a world citizen, you know, world health. We have to.
Okay, but what causes all this world debt?
Yeah, they don't think about that, you know.
Oh, that subject can't be discussed. Well, why we have all this debt in the first place, huh?
Right.
And nobody stops and say, well, why do we have so much debt in every world, in every country? And, well, but we can't talk about that. We just have to accept it and try to figure out somehow to make things more cost-effective. Well, what makes them so they're not cost-effective?
If the whole states want to talk about sustainability, why is it such a taboo? And, And shame on you if you talk about the sustainability of being out of debt. Debt is unsustainable, and it's the number one unsustainable thing. Oh, we can't talk about that.
Well, and I think Greg just got through explaining that very well, why that you have unsustainable debt, because if you borrow the principal and then you add interest, your debt has always got to be greater than the principal, so therefore it's no way you can pay for things because the debt is constantly growing, but their money supply is not. It's growing some, but not near the rate the debt is, and it seems everybody's afraid to even touch that subject.
I think we should call in our military and get rid of that. We don't need that if we're going to give up our American law and our American way of life and listen to the United Nations and just become one big global mess, socialist, communist, kingdom, whatever you want to call it. We don't need a military going out and defending our way of life because we're going to get rid of it anyway. We're going to give it up. We have to give it up for financial reasons, right? And here we get right back again. The same sort of principle where when Byron was talking about where he worked, people wanted to earn more money, but when it got down to wanting to ask for it or to try to get it, they didn't want to be any part of it because they could lose their job. And see, that's exactly what they're trying to do globally. And just tie this whole thing into a monetary deal. And if we just don't have independent nations anymore, we just got one big global mess, that somehow that's all going to be better. And the system will just keep rolling along. The debt will just keep growing and growing. And the tyranny and the suffering just keep growing and growing. It's BS. And, you know, people need
to...
Well,
it'll be just like there is at the store you work at. The average person hardly gets enough money to live on. If they do that much without having two people in the family, they probably don't have enough. And yet nobody asked the question, well, why does the CEO then get $25 million and we only get maybe $24,000 a year? And nobody seems to bring that subject up. And why are they entitled so much? And then you get the Democrats. They're always going to, and Bernie Sanders at least, they're always going to give something free, and then they're going to take it from the rich. Well, how did the rich get so rich? Now, if you had a basic, you know, if you can have a minimum wage, you should be able to have a maximum wage. And therefore, if the CEO wants a raise, he has to raise everybody in the store wages too. And I put that on Facebook, and most people don't agree with me how the money works, but he said, well, now that makes a lot of sense. Instead of taking that money away from the rich and giving it to the government, you just say, okay, now you've got to share that wealth. You just can't have one or two guys making multiple millions, and the rest of the people just barely scraping by. That's a real problem that needs to be solved. Well, the only way you can solve that, you can't let these guys create their own wages and set their own wages. And, of course, once they get CEOs of the companies, then they can sit down and set their own wages, and there's no limit to what they can set. And they also can set how much wages the people that's doing all the actual work gets, which is unbelievable if you look at relationship between the two. And one is totally unbelievable that you would expect them to work that for that little when you're getting that much. But nobody talks about that either. And then again, hardly anybody wants to actually address how the money system is created. And somebody sent me a film from a banker in England was talking about. He said, one thing that you need to understand is the Bank of England has a special privilege that nobody else has. And that's it. Its promise to pay, it becomes the payment immediately. When you get the promise to pay, it becomes the payment. And I put on there, I went back and said, well, man, that seems like that's fraud from the beginning. That you can, your promise, I can promise to give you something and don't, but yet you still get it. And this guy come on and said, well, you know, but Byron, I can prove that's how it works. And I said, well, I'm not arguing that. But now if you're going to send me a promise to pay that you're going to give me a horse in a week, and you don't give me the horse, but I will still have the horse in a week because that promise to pay will become the horse. And I never got another answer, period, on that one.
And well, the other thing about that one,
see that can't possibly be true.
Well, the other thing about
that
one,
that's how I say it works. It has to be fraud on its face. Go ahead, Greg.
Well, that's the other thing that comes to mind when you talk about that is if their promise to pay is payment to me, why do I have to borrow it and be in debt to them if I got paid? I mean, these are, and you know, Rule sent me a thing, I think it was this week, but anyway, I got into this U.S. debt ceiling thing, and I was reading an article, and it was, of course, the guy that wrote it was listening to economists and quoting economists, so it was pretty screwed up, but it said there's two types of U.S. debt, and the first one is the one I wanted to talk about. It says, the first debt is what the government owes to itself. It says most of that is the Social Security Trust Fund and Federal Employee Retirement Funds. And then it says, so now this is debt that the government owes itself, right? So I asked myself the question.
You've got to explain that to me. How can the government owe itself? And if it's a fund they built to take care of that problem later on, how can that be a IOU? I mean, if the fund is saved for that, that has to be actual money that's saved. So how do you get to be where you're owing money for something you've already saved? I mean,
I understand it just makes more and more questions. Like I had the question was, okay, if the government defaulted on a debt that it owed itself, would it foreclose on itself and take its own property? I mean, you know, how ridiculous is it? And then the other question is if the government has debt that it owes to itself, where did it get the money from to go into to borrow from itself? And if the money came from itself, why would it borrow it from itself? I mean, you know, and then, you know, when you read the whole article, it's any wonder why they're getting by with what they're getting by with, because it's probably like that one lady that the older people that Rule is talking about. They just throw up their hands and there's nothing you can do about it because they made it so complicated and so much bullshit that most people don't want to even put up with it. But this is the kind of thing we're supposed to understand, that the government owes itself. And I want to ask you, the listener, how can you owe yourself? And what if you default to yourself? Then what happens to you? Answer me these questions. It's ridiculous. So I just wanted to bring that point up.
Go ahead, Rule.
Well, most people are so medicated they can't, they're barely functioning anyway. They're like, you know, it's like a car running on one cylinder. That's the average person. And you know, yesterday I had the opportunity, I call it an opportunity, but I was working for a local businessman here, and one of the gentlemen, he's same age as me, and recently he took an early retirement, and we were hauling stuff out to a storage unit, and I asked him, I said, well, what'd you do with your new pickup that you were driving the other day? He said, oh, I leave that at home, and this is my work truck. And I said, oh, okay. And he said, yeah, I wish I didn't owe money on my house. And I said, well, there's a solution to that, you know. I said, isn't that something you owe on your house? I said, you know where all that money comes from on a loan, don't you? And he said, no, I don't care. He said, well, the bank just lends it to me. And I said, no, the bank don't lend you anything. I said, they monetize your signature and monetize digits. And I said, they're not making a loan. I said, it's a racket. And he said, you're way over my head. I said, he said, you're giving me a headache. And I said, no. I said, well, let me make it simple for you. I said, how are you going to pay off your house anyway with the only thing you have is principal? And he said, I don't understand that word. I said, okay, I said, well, they don't give you interest to pay the interest on your loan. He said, you're giving me a headache. I said, no. I said, think about this. I said, you're going in. You're, you're getting a loan, what you think is a loan, and there's only the amount of your loan, I said, okay, let's say you borrowed $10,000 on something. The only thing you're getting, and I said, you're not really getting anything, is $10,000. But I said, they want $11,000 back. I said, where's the $11,000 come back from? He said, I don't really care. I said, well, you should care, because I said, you borrowed the money so that
yeah.
you think is money. And he said,
yep.
he said, well, that's just sick. And I said, yep, it is sick. I said, they're ripping you off. And he said, them SOBs, blank, blank, blank. And he said, well, he said, I'm just going to live my life and enjoy what I can. And it's so hard on the mindset of the simpletons that just like throw their hands in the air and said, that's why I just choose to find the peace of mind I can get out of this life. So you see where they've got everybody is trapped that they can't think, you know, just get up and get your morning coffee, eat your sugar, bang your head against the wall and go back to bed and do the same routine over and over. You might as well be in a prison cell, you know?
Well,
you know,
we talk about it over and over. People need to care. You got to have people that care. And hopefully this radio program, we're communicating enough to where people who listen consistently are beginning to care so that they will take action. And the action that needs to be taken, I believe still, if there's anything left of America, is through the legislative process, and that is to pass law that stops what's going on and does it in a peaceable way and changes it so that we have a better life now instead of worrying about a better afterlife.
Well, you guys make me think about, you know, do you all remember when kids are about 3 years old? I may not be quite accurate there, but almost every question they ask is why? Why?
Yeah.
Why? Well, how come that when we get older, we forget about, well, why? How can that be? What? Can that be true? And nobody seem to forget all the things that they had to have and what that's how they grew in knowledge was asking why. Why does that happen that way? Why? Why? And it seems like when they get older, everybody forgets to ask why or how could that be. They seem to just let that out, and now they just accept everything, what everybody tells them, and never think and says, well, how could that be? What happens to people when they get older that they forget about the whys and how that could be, when that's what they should be asking all the time? Well, just how could that work? Why should that work that way? How does it work that way? But it seems like we forget that, and all of a sudden we get in that, well, we have to believe what we're told, and that's all there is to it. You don't have the right to ask why anymore. And that's what we should all be doing, is say, well, why? How could it work that way? And if we're getting so much debt, why are we getting so much debt? What is actually happening that we get so much debt when we think we got money? And then you go and read from the right out of the library, Federal Reserve Purposes and Function book. It says, well, when banks make loans of credit, the credit is simply how much they owe you. And they don't give you anything except a number stating how much they owe you, and they call that the money. And people should say, what? How could that be? But they don't. They just accept it, like that guy in England. He said, well, that's the way it is. I guarantee that's the way it is. Okay, I'm not arguing that's the way it is, but how can that be that way without being massive fraud? But there is no way possible for the promise to pay actually to be the payment, because you use the whole definition of promise to pay goes away. And and if they go put it on the books as a liability, then you know that they never actually give you anything, or they wouldn't have a liability left. If I give you $100, I don't have a liability for $100 to you. You've already got it. But nobody seems to ask, well, why? How could this be? How could we have this much debt? And why can these guys at the top of the company get millions, while the actual people that are doing most of the everyday work aren't getting hardly enough to live on? In fact, think about it. If I worked at Target, which I don't anymore, I guess, I do in a way, but if my total income is $20,000 a year, but it cost me $22,000 a year. If it cost me $20,000 to rent the house I'm in, how in the world would you expect to be able to live any place? And then they scream, "Oh, we got a problem. We got to get affordable housing." Well, why is the housing not affordable? Who is getting the money so they can't pay us enough money to even rent a house, a decent house? And nobody ever asked these questions. And see, that's the real problem with Americans, because they forgot all about asking why, how could that be? And Rule said it so well. Well, I just don't want to hear about it. I don't want to think about it. And see, that can never be the answer for anything.
What if we had done that like in World War II, said, "Oh, we don't want to get involved," which we did for a long time, then they got us involved. Or, you know, how about the thing down, the people coming across the southern border of the United States, "Oh, we don't want to get involved," and there's a lot of them out there that don't want to get involved. But if we just didn't get involved with anything, everything would just go rampant and nuts. There'd be no boundaries. There'd be no consistency in anything. And, you know, Labor Day, they say, is to pay tribute to the contributions and achievements of American workers. And I just want to know, since last Monday, with people knowing that Labor Day was rolling around, how many conversations did you hear, or how many, how often did you hear people paying any kind of tribute to the contributions and achievements of American workers? The lady or person at the checkout at Walmart, or the janitors up in your schools or businesses, or any of those normal, average, everyday workers you see out there, how many people really were thinking about the contributions and achievements of those people? And I think the only ones that get any tribute in this country are the CEOs and the people at the top. So this Labor Day thing is really kind of ridiculous. I think mostly it's just about barbecue and beer and having another day off of work. That's the quality of the tribute. And, you know, we're talking about making a better life for everyone in America and, quite frankly, the world. Because if we start monetizing roads and bridges and spending this money in the circulation as a payment for the wealth of our nation, the rest of the world would follow. And so, you know, this Labor Day thing, it's really what it's supposed to be about, but it's not. Nobody cares about that anymore either. They just want to have a good time.
Well, that seems to be true. And, of course, I think we could also, when the Constitution says it's not just roads and bridges, it also says, you know, post offices and post roads. So
yeah.
We also... I'm shocked anymore of how much it costs to mail a letter. It's just mind-boggling to send a letter, you know. And if it's that high priced, well, then there's got to be a problem there that could be solved. And can you imagine if you got your mail, you get the mail things for a nickel, and the government picked up the rest of it with money they created as a wealth? And then can you imagine how much beneficial that would be for everyone in America? Not just a few, it would be for everyone, because everybody mails some letter sometime.
You know, I think part of the equation on this postage stamp deal is that with email and the internet, a lot more communication is happening that way, and I don't think people are writing as many letters, handwritten letters, as what they used to. And so the volume has gone down for the postal system, but they still have all those workers that need to get paychecks and stuff like that. So what are you going to do? They're going to increase the cost of mailing a letter. And they've been doing it pretty consistently for the last number of years, because, you know, I think I remember when it was 13 cents and it went up and up and it keeps going up and up. And, of course, at the same time, with the cost of living rising and rising, all those workers at the post office, what they have to pay for things in their life, that keeps going up and up too. So there's that that pressure, that wage pressure. And so I kind of think what's happened at the post office is they still have all the costs they had, but they just don't have the volume of people, buying them postage
stamps.
But,
you have to get down to the root of the problem. Every time is the same. Is money's created as interest-bearing debt.
Yeah.
And that's the root of the problem, and you're never going to solve anything until you get to the root of the problem. You can cut down a tree and you can do all kinds of things, but if you don't get to the root, I guarantee you don't live, you don't kill it. And that's what we're trying to do in our show, in our radio program, is get the people to think about, we need to get to the root of the problem, and the root of the problem is money created as interest-bearing debt. That's the real root of the problem of every problem we have. It's a cost of housing. It's a cost of everything. It comes from the same root. It's money created as interest-bearing debt.
Mm-hmm.
And with that, I see our time is about up. And so I'd like to thank Rule for being on and sharing his experiences with us. I think that's a high point in my life, is listening to him talk about all the people he's talked to and gets the opportunity to talk to and what he's doing, and he does. And that's going to make an impact in time. And I think we've made a lot bigger impact than what we think we have most of the time, because we don't – I've had people I know that don't know, put a lot of time into trying to explain this to people. And but yet in time you lose – track with them, but yet this, you see it slowly, people, they're starting to think about more about the concept of money, and that's what we're here for. There's a difference between debt-based money and wealth-based money, and that's what we're trying to get people to see, what the consequences are and how many much benefit is you're going to have when you go to a wealth-based money, where money's created as a benefit to the people, not as an interest-bearing debt. And with that, unless you have something really important you want to say right quick, I see our time is about up. I'm starting to hear the music. Go ahead.
I got two things. Rule was talking about, he's starting a conversation. Pretty soon he's out in the parking lot talking to someone, and this is kind of funny because when you start these conversations, you'll be surprised where they take place, but they can take place anywhere, and it's important that you start these conversations and have those conversations about what we use for money, how it's put into circulation, how it affects our life, regardless of where that conversation is. And the other thing is I had some say they were having problems listening to archive programs online. If you've been having a problem and you can't listen to our archive shows online, send us an email and let us know, and we're looking into it, and we're going to try to fix it if it's a problem.
Byron and Greg want to thank you for listening to the Wealth Money Radio Show. Please visit our website at wealthmoney.org. We would appreciate your support by purchasing the books and materials. Don't just purchase the books, but study the information we have presented and tell others the truth of our debt-based system, the problems interest causes, and the slavery it promotes. Thank you for your support.